And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. Can't get to the phone, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to preview two schools in terms of their prospects. We're going to focus on Western Michigan as well as Vanderbilt coming up a little bit later on in the program. We'll also get to your phone calls and your tweets. But, Paul, let's start with the news from Friday. It did not become official until later in the day on Friday, and that is that the Giants have come to a long-term contract with Jason Pierre-Paul, and they also re-signed John Jerry as well as Josh Johnson to be the backup quarterback. Let's start with JPP, four-year contract. I think clearly this is a great outcome because it hammers out the fact that he's going to be on the books for the next 4 years, and you also have, keep in mind, Damon Snacks Harrison as well as Olivier Vernon also on the books through the same amount of time that JPP is there, so you have continuity now for the next few seasons on the defensive line.
Yeah, you know, I've often said that defenses will build championships because Bill Parcells taught me that back in the 80s. And if you were to believe that and you look at the Giants roster right now, you're saying to yourself, well, that front four, we don't know what's going to go on with Hankins. But even if he's not back, they'll get somebody to replace him. Three of the front four is going to be the same now for the next several years. The secondary, Apple's going to be around a long time. Jenkins is just now starting to enter his prime. Collins is not even close to his prime. Darian Thompson,
rookie contract,
just starting. Think about that. Now, DRC is a little longer in the tooth. Yeah, but he's still got a couple years to go, probably. The Giants' defense, for the most part, should be a top 10 defense now for at least the next 2 years. It's hard for me to think that they won't be, not given the talent that they've got signed up and under contract.
And especially based on what they produced in 2016, barring an injury, you don't expect this group to fall off much, considering the core is together.
The only unit that's really in flux is the linebacking core.
Where there could be changes because of pending free agents.
You just don't know. But I would say for the duration of Eli Manning's term here, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, Eli Manning's going to have a chance to make the playoffs because he's going to have a defense that will give him that opportunity.
And in terms of the depth chart, based on what you just laid out, Paul, the fact that, okay, on paper, it looks like the starters are intact for the next few seasons. Now, I think, obviously, when you have a defense like that, the key is to develop the players on the back end of the depth chart so that they're ready to go in the event that somebody goes down or misses some time.
For years and years, I've always said that when you're building a team, one of the things that you look for in the offseason, if you're looking for starters, that's usually not a great sign. But if you go into the draft and free agency, and for the most part, you're simply looking for backups to enhance the depth chart, then you know pretty much going into the spring that you're going to be a playoff team.
Now, the other side in terms of the signings, John Jerry, who's been with the team the last few seasons, played right guard last season. He's been very durable in terms of playing all 16 games in the last few seasons. That's important to note as well. So they bring him back. So when you look at the right side, Paul, of the offensive line, and we had hinted at this in the wake of the DJ Fluker signing, there's some competition because there's versatility. Fluker can play right guard and right tackle based on his days with the Chargers. Bobby Hart can play guard and tackle on the right side, and John Jerry, we know, is strictly a guard. But those three players are going to have an opportunity, at least it appears, to fight for two spots come OTAs and training camp.
No question. The Giants have increased the competition along the offensive line. John Jerry has proven to be a more than adequate pass protector, and so that's not a bad thing to have when you have an older quarterback on your team. Certainly, you want to improve your run blocking. That's why Fluker was brought in for competition. But Jerry's become actually a very well-liked guy in that locker room amongst the offensive linemen. He has fit in here pretty well.
And he's a veteran who has certainly melded well with the Weston Richburgs of the world and players have had to obviously anchor this offensive line. So they're going to try to continue to build off the continuity that they've had over the last few seasons. That's key on the defensive line. The offensive line, clearly, if there's any trend we're seeing in the offseason, it's investing in the trenches, which I'm sure Paul is doing jumping jacks right next to me inside over that. With that being said, that is going to wrap up our opening segment here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Creek, who is the radio analyst for Western Michigan, is going to join us shortly to watch that interview and hear what he has to say about those prospects. Head on over to Giants.com. Lance Bettle, Paul Dottino with you here for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. As we mentioned, we are going to look ahead at some of the upcoming prospects for the NFL draft. Today's focus will be Western Michigan as well as Vanderbilt. The Giants busy late last week hammering out some contracts for Jason Pierre-Paul as well as John Jerry, two critical members of the defensive and offensive lines. And in terms of the defensive line, the biggest question mark, at least right now, is the fact that Jonathan Hankins remains unsigned. And, you know, we talked about this, Paul, with respect to the market. You know, defensive tackles have not had the money splash their way, and I think part of that is because there's a premium on pass rushers and guys that are proven commodities at getting to the quarterback. But I would think that the longer and longer that Hankins is out there could maybe perhaps mean good things, that the Giants perhaps have a better chance to bring him back under those circumstances.
You'd like to think so. You just don't know. The defensive tackle spot should be rather fruitful in the draft. And you have to wonder how that will play into things from both sides, from the team's angle, where they can say, well, guess what? If you don't do anything by the draft, we can go out and get somebody, and there are so many good first and second round prospects at the position. Maybe our need to bring you back won't be as great. They could certainly say that, hypothetically speaking. Jonathan Hankins could also say, well, you know what? I'm still not happy with the deals that I'm hearing about, and I'm going to hold out a little bit longer, and maybe after the draft, some team that needs a defensive tackle didn't get one in the draft, and they're going to pony up the money that I want. So, and that might be the Giants for all you know. It could go any which way. But here's what I will say. As long as you don't hear of Jonathan Hankins taking visits to other teams, the Giants are probably still in play.
Absolutely. I think that's certainly a big key, considering Rumorville tends to swirl a lot at this time of the year where players are heading and where they're visiting. But the defensive line, the emphasis here is in the wake of JPP signing that long-term deal, you have guys on the books, you know how to prepare your cap space, mm-hmm. and you know if you have to fill in other voids, you know the space that those three are taking up, which is
exactly.
a huge positive.
No question.
With that being said, we're now going to shift gears to the upcoming NFL draft and some of the prospects coming out of Western Michigan in particular, as we are now joined by John Creek, the Western Michigan radio analyst, and he's kind enough to give us a few minutes. John, you got Lance Bettle, Paul Dottino here with you on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Great, Lance. Good to be with you talking about Western Michigan football.
Well, there's a number of prospects that Western Michigan is going to showcase here in the upcoming draft, John. Let's start with Keon Adams, who is their linebacker slash pass rusher. Where do you think he's going to wind up, and what jumps out to you about his play that could transition well to the NFL?
Yeah, one of the things about Keon, kind of the one guy that doesn't get a whole lot of attention from NFL people is the special teams play. He was on, I believe, all four special teams units at Western Michigan. Obviously, he had some good stats, had 8 sacks, 17 tackles for losses at that rush end, maybe a little undersized at that defensive end to do in the NFL, but definitely an outside linebacker type guy. But just, you know, great guy, great teammate. Came in as a tight end, actually, so pretty athletic player. Came as a tight end, switched to linebacker, then ended up getting a being pretty prolific at the rush end position for Western Michigan. So I look for a lot of good things for Keon. Maybe not a draft guy, but definitely a free agency guy. Can help you in a special teams unit, too.
So we got the sleeper out of the way. Let's go right to the top. And Corey Davis, who had the ankle trouble, and we know what happened at the combine, unable to do all kinds of stuff that some people would have wanted him to do. Where does he stand as you understand it right now? I mean, I know the Giants aren't necessarily looking wide receiver, especially not in the first round after signing Brandon Marshall. But where he goes certainly could have a domino effect on where some guys fall in that round.
Yeah, you see Corey as, you know, the top one, two, maybe three wide receivers in the draft. Had a phenomenal career at Western Michigan, 300 catches, 5,000 yards, and 50 receiving TDs. Only one in NCAA history to do that. Was the all-time leader in yards with over 5,200. And Corey, you know, a lot of people don't realize that P.J. Fleck, the head coach at Western Michigan University, was an NFL wide receiver coach. So Corey got not only, you know, a good coach in the college ranks as a head coach, but got a lot of experience on what PJ learned with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as being a wide receiver coach. So Corey does everything. I mean, he just runs great routes. His speed is off the charts. Good size at 6'2", about 212. played in the MAC, so the competition thing might be a question, but played really well against Michigan State, Wisconsin, Northwestern, some of the Big Ten teams that Western Michigan schedules every year. So I think Corey is, you know, it depends on how the draft plays out, but probably a top 10, top 15 pick, I would think, in the NFL draft this year.
Yeah, you know, I will say this, Lance, 1 second. I will say this. When I watched some highlights of him and I had seen some cut-ups of him, he does look like he's one of those plug-and-play guys, and that's probably because of what you said. And I didn't realize that one of his coaches had been in the NFL at some point. But you can't say enough about a plug-and-play guy because there's so much pressure in the NFL now when you draft a guy to get him ready as quickly as possible, and that's going to be a big edge for somebody who grabs him.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I don't know if Corey's going to be the elite receiver his first year in the league, you know, maybe a number two, number three guy, and actually also played in the slot at Western Michigan. Mm-hmm. So played all over the place, played out wide, played in the slot, and actually blocked really well. That was one of the things that Coach Fleck and the wide receivers coach, Coach Simon at Western Michigan, asked a lot of the wide receivers to block for running backs because Western Michigan had a great running game. So he does that also, another intangible, you know, blocking wide receiver on the outside. But, I see Corey as, you know, just getting him in there and getting him playing. He's an NFL-type guy. We talked about it all year long with Robin Hook, our play-by-play guy. He's just an NFL-type receiver and showed that this year in the American Conference and in the Cotton Bowl against Wisconsin.
And, John, I think when you look at his measurements, 6'3 jumps out to many people. From what I've read and from what I've seen, you know, they refer to him as a very attractive red zone option. You, however, I think have painted a nice, well-rounded picture of him in terms of his route running. But if he doesn't have an opportunity to fully flap his wings, per se, as a rookie in the NFL, how much can he thrive in the red zone given his height?
Yeah, I could see that. You know, some of the highlight reels you see on Corey are a lot of fade patterns in the end zone.
Exactly.
Is obviously the one against Northern Illinois, the one-handed catch, which was ESPN's top play of the week. Obviously got a lot of play. So he's definitely, with his height and his weight, he gets really good separation off the line of scrimmage. Obviously, you know, NFL corners will be, you know, a little bit different than what he's played in college. But I think his strength and getting off the line of scrimmage, getting to the routes, and the big thing he doesn't do, he doesn't slow down on his routes. I mean, he makes his cuts, and he's still at full speed when he does it. So, he was just a pleasure to watch and a really good team guy. So I think he's going to be a great, great pickup for somebody in the NFL.
In terms of the offensive line, staying on the offensive side of the football, Taylor Moten is probably the one to watch out of Western Michigan. I know he's had experience, John, at right tackle and right guard in terms of how much playing time he's had during the course of his career. Where do you think he projects in the National Football League? Where is his strength, right guard or right tackle?
You know, I think I can see him playing either way, and one of the reasons why is he was a really good high school basketball player and had really good footwork. I saw him play basketball in the Lansing area at Holt High School, and his footwork is incredible. And even though he's put on, you know, 50, 60 pounds since he came in as a freshman in college, you know, he's about 333 now. I can see him being, you know, either spot wherever he kind of fits in with the NFL, whoever drafts him, kind of what they're looking for. Probably tackle is his position, which he played at, in college most of the time, so he's more comfortable there. But I can see him being a guard, being an athletic guy, getting out on some poles, on some sweet plays, getting out in front of and be on the block for the running backs on those plays.
Yeah, I kind of think in my mind he would be on the radar for the Giants. They'll be picking 40th overall when they get to their second round selection, and you know, I could see him potentially being in that spot. I know that the offensive line in general, the elite guys in this draft seem to have some mixed reviews, but from what I've heard is that second, third, fourth round, solid prospects, guys who may not necessarily be, you know, superstars in the league right away, but solid prospects who are going to be workmanlike and give you a lot of years in this league are the kind of guys you can get in this draft. He seems to be in that mode. Is that agreeable to you, or do you see something different?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, Taylor was one of the leaders on the leadership council with Western Michigan, was a captain, did all the right things, 3.3 grade point average, all Mid-American Conference academic selection for 3 years, I believe. And just another thing, be a good teammate, good athletic guy. In Western Michigan, you know, we talk about Corey Davis and Zach Terrell and some of those guys. Western Michigan had a great running game also. I think people, you know, forget about it was almost a 50-50 yardage in passing and running. So Taylor's done both. He's done, you know, pass protect for Zach Terrell and gave Corey time to get downfield and run patterns. He's also done a great job of block running, of blocking for running backs, Jarvion Franklin, Jamari Bogan. So I think Taylor's a well-rounded type offensive lineman that's ready to play in the NFL.
I would think if the Giants did draft him, they would be looking at him to compete at tackle, quite frankly. I mean, I think that's the way it kind of shapes out right now with who the Giants have on their roster. So tell me, if you will, if he needs to polish up some stuff, if he needs to improve on something that would make him an competent NFL right tackle, so where he could compete for a job, what would he still need to show you?
I would probably think his pass blocking, you know, just facing the types of rush ends that you see in the NFL. The Mid-American Conference, surprisingly, actually has some pretty good rush ends, but maybe a little undersized, maybe the 225, 235, 240 rush ends that we have in the Mid-American Conference, where in the NFL, you've got these guys with the same type of speed but are probably 10, 15 pounds heavier and get off the ball pretty quick. So I think Taylor would be something to work on that. I know he did really well at the Combine in some of the Senior Bowl games that he played in. He showed really well in those type of situations. So I think he's getting better at that. But that's one thing that I think is going to be a big deal, protecting somebody like Eli Manning or a quarterback in the NFL.
Talking with John Creek, the Western Michigan radio analyst, you alluded to the quarterback, Zach Terrell. And last one from me, John, in terms of his numbers, I think it's impressive when you look at his touchdown-to-interception ratio, which has really jumped off the page. Now, looking at it from the Giants' lens, you know, it looks like they may be bringing in some veterans to try to solidify the backup to Eli Manning, but it's maybe never too early to invest in a young quarterback. What jumps out to you about Terrell, and how can he project in the NFL in terms of what his strengths are versus what his weaknesses are?
Yeah, just his efficiency. I think, like you talked about with his interceptions, I mean, he only had four interceptions all year long with over 4,000 yards passing and you know, a lot of TDs he'd thrown to Corey Davis and some of the other wide receivers. But Zach, just very smart, very intelligent quarterback, was a Campbell Trophy Award winner, which is basically the academic Heisman Award winner. So it tells you a lot about not only his football ability, but his academics and his smartness and being able to make good decisions. Zach's a good athlete, too. You know, had a lot of yards rushing, had some big third down and big touchdown rushing this year for Western Michigan. So I think Zach's going to be, doesn't have the strongest arm, although he's worked on that. I saw him at his pro day and actually is starting to throw the ball a little better, put on about 10 pounds. So he's definitely, when he's training, I think Corey Davis and him are doing some training together. So he's definitely changed that aspect, but just his efficiency. Now he's going to have to work on his arm strength. That's one thing, those deep out patterns that the NFL guys are asked to throw. Very good deep ball thrower. Obviously, with Corey Davis, with his speed, Zach does a great job of laying it up and letting the receivers get to the ball. So that'll be that was a good thing that Zach did this year. But I think just the speed of the game, too, again, at the NFL level, with the guys coming at you a little faster and defensive backs being quicker than linebackers. So the speed of the game and maybe some of that and the arm strength might be something he needs to work on at the next level.
Well, John, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for breaking down the Western Michigan class.
Thank you, John.
Okay, appreciate the time.
John Creek, Western Michigan radio analyst, kind enough to give us a few minutes. So they have about four prospects of note in terms of what may come out of the draft at various different positions. But the offensive lineman and the linebacker, the underrated linebacker slash pass rusher, I think, are two guys to watch.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we have enough of a sample size in terms of the linebacker that you asked about,
yeah,
in terms of his coverage skills, because he played a lot on the D-line for
Correct.
them. I don't know, you know, if he's probably going to be a sixth or seventh round pick, to be quite frank with you. And maybe at that point you take a shot and you take a flyer and see what he can do as an athlete. But for me, Taylor Moten's on my radar. There's no question about it. I mean, in the second round, if he's there, and he probably will be, it's going to be right in the middle of the second round, I think, is where he goes, potentially late second round. He's going to be on my radar because I'm thinking the Giants are not going to grab one of those first-round offensive tackles. I'm thinking there's too many mixed reviews on those guys for the Giants to spend the 23 on one of those guys. And so they're probably going to be thinking O-line is a real possibility in round two. That's where I'm going. Moten is certainly one of those guys.
This was an interesting quote. NFL.com does a really nice job in terms of giving an entire scouting report of every single draft prospect that they expect to be taken. And this is what an area scout for an NFC team told NFL.com about Moten. Quote, I had to go back and watch his 2015 tape when he played guard because, as I mentioned, little guard, a little tackle in college. He was a little rough at tackle this year, but this isn't his spot. So, see, according to them, they project him more at a guard. Big and strong as a guard, he was moving guys from Ohio State around like it was nothing. End quote. And Ohio State / Alabama are the two schools that you think produce the most pro-ready type of defensive players and so forth. So that I thought was interesting in terms of their evaluation of him at Western Michigan going up against the Ohio State
and
defense.
That line is significant because it goes back to what John Creek said about level of comp when he said the Mid-American Conference. Okay, because there will be people who are going to look at tape and they're going to say, okay, well, now how does he project against some of the best of the best? Because in the Mid-American Conference, obviously you're not dealing with superpowers. And so that's where it can get tricky. I like the fact that he said he got him at 330. Now, originally he came in, he was a 6'5", 319 guy.
Which is where he's listed on most websites.
Okay. Yeah. As John said, though, they got him up to 330 now. He said he was measured him out, I guess, at the pro day. Excuse me, or whatever it was that he had seen him measured at. He's up to 330. I like that. I'm going to assume it's not from leftovers at Thanksgiving. I'm going to assume it was.
Well, I'd hope he had worked that off by now.
I assume it was put on the proper way. I got to look at tape on him. Again, I've started now my work, and I've not gotten to Moten. But I'm interested in him. I'm intrigued in him from the stuff that I've read. I watched some of the stuff at the All-Star games with him. He had a good week at Senior Bowl. So I want to get a look. He did say the pass protection is going to be a question because the guys in the MAC
the type
are
of pass
not
rushers.
The elite.
They're not as big.
Size, strength, speed, everything. They're not the elite guys. But you know what? If he's got the physical tools, and certainly at 6'5", 330, he would have the physical tools to play tackle in this league. If it's simply a matter of technique against some better competition, you can coach that up. You can get that out of a second-round pick.
Well, the appeal is the versatility or the experience, I should
that
say,
too.
In playing both
no
positions.
Question.
Because you can't go wrong when you have
you
somebody
can't.
In there. But let me pose this question to you, Paul. Right now, if you look at the roster, Fluker, Hart, and Jerry, mostly right-side offensive linemen. I think
right.
We can agree.
Right.
Does then perhaps, if you're looking at an offensive lineman, does the necessity in the draft have to be somebody with experience more so on the left side, even if it's a left guard, but somebody that is comfortable playing on the left side to balance out the current roster? Does that have to be a part of the conversation?
You need a third tackle on the roster, a swing tackle who can back up both tackle spots. Now, does the guy have to have experience there? If you think he's got the skill set to do it, he doesn't have to have experience there. If, as long as you believe he's got the skill set to play it. If he doesn't, because some guys are strictly built to be right guards. Some guys are built more because of their technique. They can play left. Or they're built to be a left guard because they don't have the bulk and the frame and the power up top
to be
or to anchor
and so
to
forth.
Be able to do it.
Yeah.
Some guys really don't have the physical makeup to flip and flop. As long as he's got the physical makeup to do it, and I think it's 6'5", 330, chances are he's got the size and the frame. Now, the question is, does he have the hip motion? Does he have the technique?
The
does he have the footwork?
And so forth, which
does
is
he
key.
Have that to do? Yeah. That's something you might be able to teach him. So I don't know. Again, I need to get a good look at him film-wise, but I don't know that that would disqualify him from my book.
And with respect to Corey Davis, the elite wide receiver, despite coming out of Western Michigan, and this goes back to what we were talking about, Taylor Moten, the offensive lineman, although Davis is appealing, I think when they evaluate him, you have to look about the type of corners that he went up against in the MAC.
Sure you do.
And whether or not that will translate well to the National Football League. And he's got the measurements and he's got the skill set. I think what was interesting to me, what John Creek said, is John pointed out the fact that he's a very good route runner. and from some of the other things that I've seen and read, they strictly focus on his red zone production, mm-hmm. and they don't focus on the fact that he's a little bit more versatile. Plus, John pointed out he's played out of the slot. And you think of a 6'3 guy, you think more of an outside guy. So if you bring in somebody who can play on the outside, on the inside, also has height, you know, that to me is a well-rounded type of receiver that you can mix and match. And that's obviously, I think, something that is extremely appealing, not just for the Giants, but for any NFL team, as opposed to bringing in a player and saying we can only use him in one facet of the line here.
Sure, no question. I mean, I do think that, you know, despite the fact that that's not considered a big conference, from what we heard from John, is that we know at least one of the coaches on the staff had NFL experience. Chances are, at some point in time, those discussions have taken place with a bunch of different guys on that team. So I'm sure that they have gotten a sampling of some pro preparations, which can't hurt either.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to get to your phone calls, get to your tweets in a little bit, but we're going to continue our preview of the upcoming NFL draft as we are now going to turn our attention to the Vanderbilt class. And now on the line is Norman Jordan, former running back for Vanderbilt, who also serves as the Vanderbilt radio analyst. Norman, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
No, everything's good. Good to talk with you guys.
Well, we might as well start with the guy that's received a lot of attention, mainly because supposedly Bill Belichick was at the pro day for Vanderbilt. And whenever that happens, Norman, clearly the media is going to jump the gun and make some assumptions and so forth. And that's, of course, the linebacker Zach Cunningham, who already had his pro day. How did he look at his pro day, and how much do you think that perhaps helped his stock as he looks forward to the NFL draft?
I'm not sure it helped him a ton. It didn't hurt him, and I think that where he's sitting, that's what he wanted to have happen. I think he'd like to have had a better 40 time, but, you know, if you watch him play on the field, lack of speed's not his problem.
What would be a blemish if you were to try to give him one?
Strength. He has a hard time taking on a big lineman, getting downfield on him. That's just tough for him, but he also has a knack of shooting gaps, and he overcomes that by just seeing where he can get through, and that's one of the reasons he had so many tackles for losses this year.
Now, go ahead. I was going to say, in terms of his tackling with respect to the run, and this is just something that I've done in terms of my research, they've pointed out that there's maybe perhaps a little bit too much of missed tackles, and that has something to do with, Norman, perhaps his technique. Is there anything that you've observed where he needs to improve to avoid perhaps on the initial point of attack bringing the guy down as opposed to perhaps having some of those missed tackles pile up?
Yeah, he's not a Reuben Foster out of Alabama type tackler. He's more of a finesse type tackler. He doesn't come and destroy you. He's normally a pretty sure tackler, but he does miss more than you would expect out of an All-American. But he does a really good job overall in terms of just helping stop the run. But I think his real strength is getting sideline to sideline.
Let me ask you two questions that always get asked of me when somebody says, hey, what did you think about this guy or that guy? They want to know, how did he improve during the course of his college career? Did you see consistent upside as he went through the process? Because development is huge, obviously. And then number two, what are his coverage skills like? Because in the NFL, boy, if you can't do that as an outside linebacker, that's a problem because you're going to lose a lot of snaps.
Yeah, his coverage skills are good, and Derek Mason, the head coach at Vanderbilt, did a real good job of making sure that he didn't get isolated with the right wide receiver much. He made sure that when he had somebody to cover as either a running back or a tight end, and he can run with a running back and a tight end and good coverage on those guys.
And in terms of improvement, have you seen constant improvement from him since he came in? Is this a very coachable guy?
Absolutely. You know, played a fair amount as a sophomore, as a junior. You're watching him going, this kid's special as a senior. Well, really his junior year, you're going, this guy's really, really good. And then you see him make the play against Auburn, mm-hmm. where I think that's the play that made him an All-American, the blocked field goal. And you're going like, now his football IQ is enormous.
Well, and I'm sure it also helps the fact that obviously he's been playing against SEC caliber players, which is considered one of arguably the top conferences in college football. And Vanderbilt perhaps is not a program that perhaps should get enough attention, mainly because of the Alabamas and the Auburns and so forth. But the level of competition that he's gone up against, how much do you think, Norman, that that helps his stock as teams try to determine whether or not they want to take perhaps a guy out of Alabama who you alluded to versus a Zach Cunningham coming out of Vanderbilt?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you talk about that, because one thing that Derek Mason's defense does is it's got 11 players with 11 jobs. You take care of your job, and then you go become a football player from that point. And that's what Zach does so well, is he takes care of his job, and then he just goes and plays football. And that's when you see him come out of nowhere and make a tackle on somebody against Georgia on a 4th-and-1 and win the ball game.
Where are you hearing in the types of whispers that are around campus in terms of where he might go? It seems to me I'm hearing a lot of folks say he probably will go right around where the Giants pick at 23, that his value does suit the ballpark or the neighborhood that they'll be picking.
Yeah, no, it looks like that's where he's headed, and I think it'd be a really good match for him to be up there, even though it will be quite a wake-up call, because he's gone from Pinson, Alabama, a town of 7,000 people, to Nashville, a town of 1 million people, and all of a sudden you go to New York City, and it's going to be a big wake-up call.
Yeah, there's a lot of people here in New York City. Interesting, you the way you phrase that. Are there specifically a lot of whispers about the Giants?
Yeah, hearing more and more about it. I don't think he'll fall to the point where Belichick can get his hands on him. I know he'd really like to have him. As you say, he was there, and I think one thing tells you how much Belichick likes it is watch that attempted fake point after touchdown block that they did. That's straight out of a playbook of what Zach did against Auburn.
Talking with Norman Jordan, Vanderbilt radio analyst. Well, that's why I started off with Bill Belichick, because it seems Vanderbilt's pro day received some additional media attention because Belichick was so involved. And, I mean, this may not impact the Giants, but from what I was told, he actually took part in the drills, specifically with Cunningham. Is there validity behind that, Norman? I mean, he had a lot of hands-on approach from what I've been told and from what I read when it came to Cunningham.
I have heard that. I have not confirmed it. It's kind of like after the blocked field goal against Auburn, I heard that he went over to Derek and said, "Hey, coach, why don't I try this?" And he tried it. So it's one of the rumors that's out there, and you know, I tend to believe it's true.
All right, Norman, I got to ask you about somebody else, because we were just talking a little while ago about offensive linemen and how the Giants look like they probably are going to be taking one at some point in the draft. Will Holden is an interesting guy to me because he's more of a second-day pick, maybe even a third-rounder. I'd certainly like to get your take on him. He's a guy who's played left tackle in college, and certainly that's something that is highly sought after in the NFL.
Well, I don't think Will's natural position is going to be left tackle in the pros. He really doesn't have the natural feet for that. His technique's very good. His size is good and all that. But his sophomore year, he played right tackle. I think that is more his natural position. That blind side left tackle is a very tough one, as you know. You've just got to have tremendous feet and able to get to, you know, keep the man off the corner. So I'm thinking he'll probably play right tackle. He's the leader of the offensive line. The running back for Vanderbilt, Ralph Webb, is the leading ground gainer of all time. And, you know, when Will's one of the linemen that helped him do that, that speaks volumes about him right there.
He's more of a run blocker than a pass blocker in your mind, because of technique or because of physical limitations?
Just physical limitations. I just don't think he's that, you know, Will Wolford. I don't know if you remember Will. He came from Vanderbilt, and Will was a great blindside tackle, but Will just had that natural ability as a freshman to do that, where, you know, Vanderbilt tends to manufacture linemen. They take them, they coach them up, and they get their technique just right. And I could see Will having a good long pro career just off of being smart and being a leader. You know, former Eagle scout, he's the kind of guy you want on your team.
Is he the kind of guy who also potentially could be a guard, or the fact that they're listing him at 6'7", that's a little high for a guard a lot of times. Is he movable in your mind?
he's movable. Vanderbilt got banged up while he was here in the offensive line, and everybody played about every position out there, so they had to plug and play a lot of situations, and I don't remember exactly all the places that Will played, but I know it seems like every lineman we had played just about everywhere except quarterback.
Well, and versatility is something that's appealing to the Giants because they do like players that have experience, whether it be on both sides or at guard and tackle. Last one for me, Norman, and you just alluded to the fact that he's 6'7", and I know that the Giants, when they've evaluated tight ends, sometimes the problem is can a tight end who's that tall get down in terms of his shoulder pad level to help with blocking? Do you perhaps see that being something that could inhibit Will Holden's development, the fact that he is so tall, or do you not see that being a problem moving forward?
No, I really don't see that being a problem. Like I said, his technique is good. His physical limitations are there, but his technique's really good, and I could see him getting up there and really absorbing what the line coaches teach them there and becoming just a good, solid, maybe not an all-pro, but a good, solid player for several years.
And, you know, it's funny, Norman, because that's what I kept hearing at the Combine when I was in Indy, is that there are a bunch of these guys on the offensive line who are going to be solid, good players, a lot of good backups, a lot of, quote, good starters, not Pro Bowl guys, but a bunch of these kinds of guys who are going to be available in rounds 2, 3, 4. You see him as a third rounder? Is that the talk that's going around school right now?
That's everything that we're hearing, sometime in the third round, hopefully for him, early third. You know, I don't see him going late second. It's just there are too many good linemen out there that, you know, just naturally have those great feet, and I think that is his one limitation.
Good news, though, it sounds like he's coachable and he was a guy who continued to improve. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. You know, he played limited as a sophomore and finished strong, then I think just played through one position or another all the way through his junior and senior year. And he's the kind of guy a lot of NFL coaches like in that he is coachable, he's smart, he can absorb something and, as Derek calls it, take it from the class to the grass.
I like that.
That is a good line. Norman Jordan, Vanderbilt radio analyst, kind enough to give us a few minutes. Norman, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lance. Thanks, Paul.
You got it. All right, so Norman Jordan with the latest in terms of the Vanderbilt class. Not nearly as big as the Western Michigan group, but Zach Cunningham, of all the prospects we've talked about thus far, with the exception of Corey Davis, the wide receiver out of Western Michigan, Cunningham is clearly the player to watch.
I don't think there's any doubt. And, you know, to hear him say that there's been a lot more talk recently about the Giants down there does kind of make you wonder how true is that interest, how much of it is smoke. We know a lot of smoke goes around the draft as well.
Yep.
But one could certainly make an argument that there is a quality player who seems to be in that neighborhood, and if you match up the need with the value, there's an equation there for the Giants.
However,
you can see them taking him.
However, what am I going to throw out here? The last time the Giants took a linebacker in the first round, it's my money line, and I got to go to it until that trend changes, Paul.
I know.
1984. That's then, all I'm going to say.
And then, of course, we had, I forget the gentleman's name from Philly on last week from Temple, and Reddick is another guy
who
has ballpark value down in that 20s range. Again, a linebacker, maybe a little more of a projection because he didn't play as much stand-up coverage.
Correct. I think that maybe the transition more to the line,
you know,
type of play.
That may be a guy who made some more big plays necessarily, but at the same time, you know, these are certainly two interesting linebacker prospects who fit the value or fit the neighborhood of where the Giants are going to pick, and that's what makes them intriguing to talk about.
Now, on a side note, the reason why we referred to Belichick is clearly because of the reports, but if they somehow, just keep this in mind, if Malcolm Butler, who has been visiting the Saints, he's a restricted free agent, the Patriots corner.
Yes.
If they were to work out a deal, the talk is that New England is going to get a first-round pick back to move back into the first round. Because right now, New England does not have a first-round pick or a second-round pick.
Where are the Saints in the first round? Do you know what number?
I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head.
I'm going to look right now.
But even if the Patriots get a pick back, it would be lower than the Giants, I believe. Because I don't know necessarily if it would be the Saints' first-round pick. I think it's another pick that they would be getting back. So it doesn't necessarily inhibit the Giants from perhaps going after Zach Cunningham. But New England, the reason why they've been connected is because of the rumors about Malcolm Butler and the fact that they may have an opportunity to at least get a first-round pick back after losing it because of some of the wheeling and dealing that they've done. So that's at least something to keep in mind as a side note. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat.
The Saints are number 11 overall in the first round,
but
which is quite a bit higher. Let's use the word higher than lower. Much higher on the board than where the Giants are.
But if I'm correct, I think the Patriots would get back what they already sent out with the Brandon Cooks deal. So it would sort of like be a reversal of what you already gave up. And therefore, they're not getting the Saints' 11th pick. They're going to get a pick which is lower in the 30s. So it would be after the Giants. So I don't see them jumping ahead, Paul, of the Giants.
You never know.
But you never know.
Belichick's got a bunch of picks at his disposal.
Correct. So
he might throw a couple of them in and say, I want that 11. He could do it.
Very possible.
In fact, what did I hear? How many deals? There was somebody put the number of how many deals Belichick has made with draft picks over like the last 5 or 6 years. And it's ridiculous how he's able to wheel and deal these things.
Also the chances that they've taken on players who were drafted maybe 2 or 3 years prior, and then he acquires them, just like we saw at the deadline this year. Eric Rowe is a particular guy with the Philadelphia Eagles. And then obviously they fit into the system and they thrive and so forth.
Anyway.
So, as we mentioned, phone lines are now open if you do want to chime in on the conversation. I know we did a lot of heavy draft preview, but 201-939-4513 is the telephone number.
And by the way, folks, we're going to be doing that now every day as we lead into the draft. We will be picking out one school, maybe two schools, each and every day. And as we've done the last couple of years here on the show, I believe this is like the third year we've done this, we will go through and preview as many Giants prospects as we think are in the conversation, because let's face it, I mean, you guys want to know who the Giants could be thinking about. So we're going to be getting all these different analysts on and newspaper guys from all these different beats from all the different schools who may have at least one prospect who the Giants might be hot for in the first or second round.
And what I'll add to that, Paul, is it's not so much perhaps who the Giants are targeting. It's also the fact that a lot of these prospects, they're going to go in the division. They're going to play for
that
the Redskins.
Too.
They're going to play for the Eagles. Look, they're going to play for the Cowboys.
Great.
Correct. Information's great
to help
because
you. We're
going to see
That's
a lot all. Of these prospects, whether it be on the Giants or the opponents that they're going to see in the upcoming season. So the whole point is to provide you with an opportunity to get a good idea of all of the prospects that are going to be coming into the National Football League. I want to get to some tweets before we reopen up the phone lines here, because a number of people weighing in on questions about draft prospects as well as the Giants roster, and this one is related to the Giants roster. So let's change things up a bit here on the program. This comes from at Gio Rosales. Could Ellison, referring to Rhett Ellison, fill the power back bulldozer of a player that we need without drafting a running back? Meaning, could he be the one that opens up some running lanes with the current personnel on the roster?
He's not a ball carrier. He's a fullback who blocks. It's that simple. I'll give you a great example. Okay, years ago when the Giants had Greg Comella, who was a fullback when Tiki Barber was here for a while, actually, it was even before that. I mean, if you want to talk, let's forget. Well, Comella was a receiving fullback. I give you a better example.
I thought you were going to go more recent.
Yeah,
I mean, you could choose.
No,
Madison,
no, no.
Hitchcock
was,
or Henry Ionoski.
No. I was going to talk about the kid who came from New Jersey. Oh, the kid from the Colts. He played for the Colts. He played in the Ivy League. I'm drawing a blank. I can't believe it. He was such a good guy. He played for the Colts. He came to the Giants and he blocked for Tiki.
Now I'm drawing blank.
Was it John something? Oh, my goodness. I'm drawing a blank.
We'll
you people are going to roast me now.
We'll find the name. Hold on.
He was an overachiever. Who was
Jim Finn.
Jim
That's
Finn.
What talking about.
There
okay.
we go. Bergen yes. Catholic's own Jim
yes.
Finn. Okay? That's who I want to compare him to. Because Finn was strictly a blocker. Didn't want him touching the ball. He was strictly a blocker. He was a one-dimensional fullback who blocked. Greg Comella was a one-dimensional fullback who just caught passes. This guy is more of a two-dimensional fullback who will catch some passes as a tight end.
And block.
But he's a blocker. He's not a ball carrier. So think of him more in the Jim Finn kind of thing than you would somebody who's going to carry the ball like Charles Way used to or Jarrett Bunch used to.
Well, and just to put things in perspective, and that's why I think it's an interesting question on Twitter.
Because Heinoski would catch and block.
Heinoski would catch, but I guess the point was Heinoski wasn't a guy that was going to get a bulk of carries.
He barely touched the ball.
That's what I'm saying. Well, and that brings us to Rhett Ellison here.
Because Heinoski was a blend of Finn and Comella. He was a blocker, but he could also catch. There you go.
Ellison, just to put his numbers in perspective, I'm glad you're getting a whole chuckle out of this.
Oh, I love talking about these old guys.
I can tell. I don't even have to say a word. It's all the facial expression.
Hey, I remember when Tucker Fredrickson played some fullback for this team, which he wasn't built to do, by the way. Go ahead.
That'll be for another show. Rhett Ellison has had one carry in his entire NFL career.
Well,
that was in 2016.
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
One carry. Well, just to paint the picture here.
Okay.
But in all fairness, though, I think it's also important to know, Paul, 51 receptions in 5 seasons. So we're talking about a player that's getting an average of about 10 catches per season.
I mean,
now he could receive and catch the ball. That's not why I'm bringing it up. But you at least need to realize if you're expecting him to come in and, you know, become a huge focal point of the receiving game, I think that may be a little misleading too.
Well, I suspect what's going to happen is he'll be the blocking tight end, and then he's going to play a bunch of H-back and a little bit of fullback. And so when he's playing blocking tight end, he's probably not going to catch it very much. When he's playing H-back, he might catch it some. And when he's playing fullback, he's strictly going to block. I mean, I think it depends on which one of the three positions he's lining up at as to what you're going to ask him to do.
201-939-4513. We'll try to get to a few more tweets, but right now, let's open up the phone lines. Jay is in Georgia. Jay, what's happening?
What's going on, guys?
Doing well, Jay. What do you have for us?
Hey, man, I just wanted to talk about the offense for a second here. We have something I'm concerned about. We have Jarrell Adams playing tight end, and, you know, everybody's saying this year we should go ahead and draft a tight end first round. I think we should do a linebacker first round because the offense, I feel like it's coming into one as a whole, and I feel like we haven't drafted a linebacker since forever. So I feel like it's time to draft a linebacker first round. Yeah. So what do you guys think?
Well, you know, we've talked about Reddick and Cunningham the last couple of shows. These guys are legitimate value prospects at where the Giants pick. So if they take one of them, you can't shake your head. You know, you have to acknowledge the fact that need does fit value, and those would be solid selections. I think really the question comes down to, at the time they pick, is there somebody like from the top 15 that falls on their board to 23? And if it's just an obvious, like, oh, my goodness, this guy dropped 8 spots, he's that good, and he's a defensive end. Or if O.J. Howard suddenly drops down to them at 23, are you going to cry if they take O.J. Howard?
I don't think anybody's going to complain about that.
Not at all.
And I think Jay, another important thing is I'd like to see what happens with the remainder of free agency. I want to see whether or not Keenan Robinson, Kelvin Shepard re-enter the conversation. They are both free agents who got significant playing time. Not that that means even if they come back, you could still say that they could use maybe another young linebacker. But, you know, you do have B.J. Goodson on the roster, who I think is going to have an opportunity to maybe get a little bit more playing time. Devon Kennard is still young, and they moved him back down to the line, and he started to thrive towards the end of last season. So I want to see what happens with free agency before I would automatically say linebacker is something that also fits the need at the tail end of the first round.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely correct. Now, let me ask you one more question. Now, do we pursue Geno Smith or do we wait a whole nother year before we look for a backup for Eli? You know what I'm saying? Or do we take one in the second or third round of this year?
I think what you need to understand is that Geno Smith, to me, he comes in, he competes with Josh Johnson to be the number two on a team that's probably only going to keep 2 quarterbacks. And I think that's the war of attrition between those two guys, and only one of them survives the opening day roster, at least in my mind.
Well, I mean, unless if they do draft a young quarterback, then you know for sure one of the two is probably only going to survive, because if you draft a quarterback, you're probably going to keep him as the third stringer.
If you draft a young QB, chances are he's a third-day selection, and if that's the case, you're going to be able to sneak him onto the practice squad because no one is going to pluck him onto their 53 if you waited to the third day to get him.
That's fair.
Right, right, definitely. Well, you know, guys, I ain't going to waste too much time, man. I appreciate y'all letting me get online. You answered my questions, so I'm satisfied.
All right, Jay, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Dave in Maryland. Dave, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, good morning. You guys made my year. I was able to sneak on. Hey, P-Dot, it's nice to see you finally draw a blank after all these years.
Oh, my goodness. I must be getting old.
Yeah. All
you
right.
know how many fullbacks I've seen come through these doors in the last 35 years? Holy smokes.
I can't imagine. I'm going to start out with a statement. I think the Brandon Marshall signing was huge because if you see Brandon Marshall, if you track him through his career, he came in, he was a bit of a distraction. He wrapped everything together. You know, he announced that he had that personality disorder and the foundation, everything. I think that's going to prove huge moving forward with him mentoring Odell Beckham. What do you guys think?
Well, you'd like to hope so. That's part of the plan as to why he was brought in. He and Beckham befriended each other over the last couple of years while Brandon Marshall was with the Jets. Marshall admires Odell's skill set, says that he's very, very happy to mentor this guy and to give him all the advice in the world to become an even better player. And, you know, it's easy to say that. Now he's in the building. Now he's got to do it. And so nobody will know exactly how they'll mesh until it actually happens that they're teammates and on the field together, but you'd like to believe that that's going to work out.
Well, and I think obviously the bigger impact is much more so what Brandon Marshall could do on the field with Odell Beckham lining up opposite him as opposed to the locker room. I mean, I think that the locker room narrative tends to get overblown based on some of the storylines that came to the forefront last season. And also, let's not forget, Dave, you know, it's not as if Odell Beckham hasn't been around veterans in the receivers room since he was drafted. You know, Victor Cruz has been here. Dwayne Harris is still on the roster. These are guys who have been there. They may not be household names like Brandon Marshall, but they've been in the room.
I would disagree a little bit, Lance, only in that Marshall is a guy who's in his 30-something, so he's had much more experience.
Well, he's had 12 seasons in the NFL, no doubt about that.
Much more experience than any of the Giants receivers has had in years past.
But I guess my point is I don't think you need to have 12 seasons in the NFL to be able to mentor somebody.
Yeah,
that's my point.
But remember, Marshall has had some very significant ups and downs.
Well, of course.
And so when he talks, he gets in front of that receivers room as a guy who's been in this league for 12 years and has seen some really difficult downs, too. Everybody in that room is going to listen to him a little bit more closely, I think, because of his experiences. So I do think there's more value than what you think, but that's okay. Bottom line is he should help Eli out.
Well, and that's what I said. That from a big picture perspective, that's the ultimate goal, what he can do on the field. Yeah.
Yeah, not only that, he's a number one. He's been a number one in the limelight. Victor Cruz had tremendous success, but Brandon Marshall knows what it's like to be the number one guy and still go through, you know, conflict with the media.
I just hope he's happy being 1A here because there's a number one in that locker room already.
Yeah.
or at least on the field.
Oh, he's already admitted that.
There is a one.
He's already admitted that.
There is a one, and he's wearing 13.
Another thing, I guess I'll touch on these last two subjects together. I saw rumors. You know how these rumors are.
Uh-oh.
I know you guys, you hate rumors. But they said that Mangold is that we might pursue Mangold. We won't put him at center, but we'll put him on the line. I still like Flowers, and I think, like you said, the third year is a telltale year. And I think Flowers is going to prove he's going to solidify his role as left tackle this year. I'll listen to this one offline. Again, always a pleasure, you guys. I enjoy your show. Be safe.
All right, Dave. Thanks for the phone call. Well, if Mangold doesn't play center, just to go with his hypothetical, Mangold's not a left tackle. So if that's what we're insinuating here, that's a pipe dream.
I don't know that he's ever played anything else except center during his entire Jets career.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I remember him strictly as a center. I mean, we could look up to see if he's ever played a little guard, but that would be the only thing that I could think of. And
possibly, but doubtful.
Yeah, but then again, you know, it goes back to the fact that you have Justin Pugh at left guard. You have John Jerry back. DJ Fluker and Bobby Hart both have experience at guard. Once again, I go back to if you're wanting to bring in competition, I would think it's more on the left side than perhaps what you have with the right side at this point. Just what I'm seeing on paper.
Yeah,
I just don't know that that's a fit.
Yeah, I don't know that that's a fit. And no disrespect to Mangold, and I don't even know if he's looking to continue his career, to be quite frank with you. I haven't heard a peep out of him since he was released from the Jets and thanked the organization and the fans for their support.
Let's head back to the phone lines. VL is in New Jersey. VL, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, B.I. What do you got for us?
So, first time calling in. Thanks for taking my call, first and foremost.
Well, thanks for making it.
So I want to start off by saying Paulie D. The Czar kind of taught me that you can never have enough cornerbacks nowadays.
Yeah.
And pass rushers.
Yep.
And with respect to that comment, what are you guys' thoughts about potentially targeting a slot cornerback specifically, or not necessarily a slot cornerback, but a cornerback who can at least also play the slot cornerback in one of the first 2 days of the draft, being that we have a solid trio starting, although DRC is on the wrong side of 30. He's still a beast, but he's on the wrong side of 30. And the other two are more of outside guys, i.e. Jack Rabbit and Apple. So what are your thoughts on that, folks?
Here's what I will say to you. From being out in Indianapolis, I've heard there could be at least a dozen cornerbacks going by the end of round two. That's how much talent is at the position. It is just loaded. It is overflowing with corners. So if you believe that, are you taking good value at pick 40? You probably are, because I'm sure there are plenty of them who are valued right in that bunch. You could probably even get a guy who's going to be able to play even in the third round, to be honest with you. It's that deep. So I'm not adverse to picking another corner, because right now the Giants have their three starters, because I do consider DRC a starter. The number four guy, well, who is it? Is it Wade? Is it Hall? Is it Sensabaugh? You know,
but all those guys.
Is it Dante Dion?
Correct. He's another option.
I don't want you to forget. I don't want you to forget him. I think he's a slot corner. That's all he is. He's got too much trouble physically matching up with guys on the outside. I think Dante Dion can play slot corner. Maybe that's how he makes the 53 this year.
Well, but here's another thing not to forget. When Spags spoke to the media before the season started in training camp, they were talking about how they're mixing and matching these guys to make sure that they're well-rounded so
yes.
that everybody knows how to play the slot, everybody knows how to play the outside. That's why there was a lot of speculation when DRC in training camp, if you recall, Paul, was lining up in the slot. People are like wondering, well, what's going on here? Is DRC now strictly going to be a slot guy? And they were just anticipating injuries down the line. They wanted everybody prepared.
Right.
So to respond to what you're alluding to, VL, they could go after a corner. Period.
Correct.
Doesn't have to be a corner that just is an outside guy or a slot guy. You want a guy who you can bring in, can groom, because a few of the players that you brought up are free agents, Paul. There's no guarantee they're even returning to the Giants.
Well, Dion is still under contract.
Yes, but outside of that, Sensabaugh's a free agent.
So's Wade.
Yeah.
And I think Hall only signed a one-year deal.
Leon Hall's a free agent, too.
So
yes.
You've got three guys there who may or may not be back. Dion's the only one who I know is going to compete at training camp. And again, I would say to you, I think Dante Dion can play the slot.
And he stood out to Spags. He caught Spags' attention.
You know why? He's a very instinctive player. He's got a lot of guts. You know, plays his butt off. I mean, he gives maximum effort on every play. But there are going to be some plays, as we saw in the preseason last year, like in Buffalo, where he's overmatched. Especially if he's on the outside.
That's true.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of Tremaine McBride from a couple of years ago. Was a great player for us in terms of depth and filling in for some guys who were injured. But sometimes just a little bit overmatched.
I'll tell you what. Think about some of the smaller slot corners the Giants have had over the years. Kevin Dockery, Emmanuel McDaniel. Those guys come to mind as diminutive, smaller slot corners who were sub guys. They played in the sub package, occasionally had to play a little bit outside. You know, that's not where they were best suited. Your chances are you were going to get burned if you had to play them too many snaps on the outside. But as long as they were restricted into their role, and if you're going to tell me Dante Dion's the Giants' fourth corner and he's strictly going to be used in slot situations, I'm going to tell you, I think he can handle it.
I'm not averse to that thinking either.
All right.
IVL, appreciate the phone call. I'm trying to remember, Paul. I think it was the Buffalo Bills preseason game this past year.
He played outside.
They targeted him two plays in a row. And then Spags said something. It was with the alignment. It was on him. They should have made
Correct.
A tweak.
Well,
from
because
what I recall.
He was on an island one-on-one,
Correct.
Man-to-man coverage on the outside. Well, and that's not what he's going to be able to defend.
Well, and that's why I'm not bringing that up to fault anybody specifically on the team. I'm bringing it up as an example of why he's better suited for the slot, because teams will notice him on the outside, and they will just throw it up.
Yeah.
And it's a 50-50 ball. And you
put
the
pass
tall
breakup
receiver
out there, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and see, that also goes into coaching. Understand what your guys can do, put them in positions to succeed, understanding what their limitations are. I mean, the best one, I tell people all the time, the greatest example of understanding what a guy does and using him to the best possible situation is Kavika Mitchell. Kavika Mitchell was not a sideline-to-sideline linebacker. He had played inside in Kansas City. The Giants brought him here. They made him a weak sideline backer, and they said to him, don't worry about backpedaling. Don't worry about getting sideline-to-sideline. We just want you to go straight ahead. And they used him a ton on the blitz, and he would either come around the outside or come up in the A or the B gap. And he became a very important part of that Super Bowl defense because they knew if we just ask him to do this, he can be really good. And because the rest of the defense was good around him, they could afford to make him a, I don't want to say one-dimensional player, but they could afford to box him into a role and allow him to excel in that role because they had so many other great players around him that could camouflage the stuff and ask them to do things that he could not do. That's when you know you're a good team. When you have a role player who can just be limited to his role and doesn't have to do other stuff that he's really not good at doing.
Well, it says a lot about the players around him that afford you the luxury to do that. Every team is put in that position where they can say, hey, buddy, go on an island and worry about your corner, and then we'll take care of the rest.
He had by far his best season that one year he was with the Giants.
And it's no coincidence that something good happened during that season as well.
He was awesome in the postseason.
Yeah.
Credit Spags.
Yeah, one of the unsung heroes. Also, quick note, did look up, Nick Mangold only played center during the course of his Jets tenure. Never was moved to another position, just to relate to that earlier phone call. With that being said, appreciate everybody for chiming in on the conversation, whether it be a few phone calls as well as the tweets. Want to thank our two guests who covered Western Michigan as well as Vanderbilt. As Paul noted earlier, we will continue that theme leading up to the draft. We will focus and highlight one school or a few schools each day, depending on how many prospects are projected to come out of those programs. With that being said, certainly appreciate everybody once again for taking part in the conversation here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll be back up and running tomorrow at noon Eastern. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.